Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Karen. This is Divya.
Hey, Divya, how are you? I don't know why. I called in on the other number three different times.
You know, I'll have to contact the support and see what's going on. So sorry about that. I apologize.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. All right. So, welcome, listeners. This is Divya Parikh, your host, and I have our esteemed guest, Karen Friedman, on the show today. And Karen, thank you so much for joining us. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Wonderful. I will introduce Karen. Karen Friedman is an international communications expert, author of the best-selling book, Shut Up and Say Something, and head of Karen Friedman Enterprises Incorporated, which helps business professionals become more powerful, persuasive communicators. Her expertise was recognized by former First Lady Hillary Clinton, who tapped Karen to provide media and political training for women in South and Central America. Karen is an award-winning former major market television news reporter whose breaking coverage of local and national events aired on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and Nightline. Today she writes as a columnist for the Philadelphia Business Journal, frequently quoted by publications such as the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, Forbes, Fortune, and CNN Money. Karen is a professional speaker who has repeatedly received top-rated speaker awards. And I am your host, Divya Parikh. A little bit about me. I have over 25 years of experience as a university professor, scientist, biotechnology professional, and global leadership wellness coach, where I have coached over 50 different countries. I have had the fortune of being a co-author of an international bestseller book, The Voyage to Your Vision, and through inspired leadership, focused and tailored plans. I love to help executives, professionals, coaches, and youth embrace their inner confidence and endeavor for continual enrichment to achieve the desired potential and success. And without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and start the show. So, Karen, if you will please share a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your personal self.
Okay.
It'll be good.
In my, and I'm not that old, but in my first life, I was a television news reporter. And I say that because it really is the basis of so much of what I do today. So I spent about 20 years as a TV news reporter. I worked in markets across the country, Huntsville, Alabama, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, did a little work at the BBC, and I ended up for 12 years at ABC Television in Philadelphia, where I was a reporter and an anchor. And that experience for all of those years really brings me to where I am today. We've been in business for about 18 years. We're outside of the Philadelphia area, and what we do is we teach people how to become more effective communicators. So in the very beginning, 18 plus years ago, our focus was on media, crisis, issues management, because that's where we came from. And we still do that. We do a great deal of that type of work, but it's also morphed into communications coaching, leadership and executive presence, lots of presentation coaching, speaker training, tons and tons of message development, and I am also a professional speaker in addition to the coaching and training programs that we run.
That is so true, Karen. It definitely will resonate with our audience who are trying to be or making an effort towards becoming a speaker or going in the industry with communications, because without communications, they cannot do anything anywhere. And even as we are speaking, the studies have come out which show that your audience will gauge you within 30 to 60 seconds, whether it's body language, whether it's your opening message, or just it could be as simple as your eye contact with them. So that is so true. And I'm so glad that we have an hour to bring your expertise to our audience. So as
well,
you
Divya,
move
you
through...
know, Divya, you know, what you say is very true, and I'll actually go a step further. Sometimes it takes your audiences less than 30 to 60 seconds. It takes 7
wow.
seconds for somebody to form an impression of you, and it can actually take 30 seconds for somebody to decide whether they're going to tune in or they're going to tune out. And part of that has to do not only with are you engaging, eye contact, body language, all is important, but much of it has to do with, boom, have you said something that means something to me? Have I listened to you for 10 seconds and thought to myself, I want to listen to that person more because they are going to provide value? So many times when I work with people, they'll say to me, can you teach me how to have executive presence? And they look at it like I should gesture this way, you know, stand this way. Some coach told me to, you know, stare this way. It's far more than just your physical presence. It has to do with your message and how you use that message to influence, empower, and motivate other people. And that's how you gain attention.
Very profound. It's just not about your presence. It's about the value you're providing them, because in today's information-rich world, the message has to connect with the audience, and that's the key. Thank you. What a nugget, golden nugget. So as you move through the TV reporting, how did you plan your transition from TV reporting to helping people improve their communication skills in so many different areas?
Well, you know, I think that I was probably at that time, like many people are today, regardless of what career you're in. You do something for a long time, you're looking for other avenues, you're getting a little bored, you might be stagnating. You know what you like and you know what you're good at, but you don't necessarily know how to use that to transition to another field or to transition to something within your own field. And that was my case. You know, I had wanted to be a TV reporter from the time I was 14 years old. I'm a little older than that now, but it was the only thing that I ever wanted to do. So when I got to the point, you know, many years later, where I was thinking, well, I'd like to do something different. I had a 6-month-old and I had a 4-year-old. And I was standing outside often late at night in not very nice neighborhoods where not very nice things were going on. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is just no place for a mother of little children to be. So I knew what I was good at. You know, I was good at interviewing. I was good at writing. I was good at live TV. I was good at getting to people to think on their feet and a host of things. I knew what I was good at, but I didn't know how that would translate to other things. And I speak about this all the time to many groups, but especially women's groups. And I was stuck. I mean, just like many of us, I was stuck for 3 years. I was stuck. I just did not know how I would ever make that move. So that said, to your question, I finally came up with a plan, which is not necessarily what I'm doing today. And not to belabor the point, my plan was threefold. I was going to do 3 things. I was going to do commercials and, you know, television-type spots, number one. Number 2, I was going to go into media and communications training, which is obviously what I do today. And number 3, I was going to do PR. So here's what happened. The first part of that, the television commercial stuff, I got a phone call to audition for the part of a television news reporter. Now remember, I had been a reporter, major market news reporter, for 20 years. And I went and I did the audition, and the agent called me and he said, Karen, I have to tell you, you did a great read, but you weren't selected. I said, really, why not? And he said, well, they said you didn't look like a television reporter. So that was part one out the window. Right. I didn't look like it. What does a television reporter look like? Clearly, they didn't think it was me. But, you know, it didn't matter that I had done it for many years. The second part of it was the media, the media and communications training. I was doing that, and I loved it. And the third part was the PR stuff. I was okay at it, but it wasn't my passion. So fast forward to answer your question. I left television with all of those three things cemented. I didn't leave on a whim saying, what will I do tomorrow? But those three things changed over the years. And one of my early contracts was a contract with the Department of Transportation. And that was terrific because it led to other things, which led to other things, which led to other things. And here we are.
Wow, amazing journey. And there is so much to learn from that, that it was just not on a whim that you left. And also when you are in your present career, it does not mean that it's the be and end of all.
Well, I think
there are life changes.
Yeah, Divya, you know, I think that what people have to realize is, you know, it's an, you know, it's life is about reinventing yourself. And the more that you look for ways to reinvent yourself personally or professionally, the more challenged you are, the more, you know, the more you challenge yourself, and quite frankly, the more interesting you are to others. So, you know, if you think about people that you've watched on news programs or you've read about, you know, these fascinating people who are doing something so completely different than what they might have done in their first life, they stay motivated and challenged, and then they inspire other people. And I don't know that there is a one-size-fits-all. I mean, if you had told me years ago, okay, Karen, you're going to write a book, I would have said, that's pretty funny. I have no desire to write a book. And then I wrote a book. You know, today in my business, we're working on digital applications to support what we do. In other words, like apps, if you will, to help people become a better communicator. I'm not a technology person. I don't know how to do that. I know content, but you find the right partners to help you. So I just think that you have to be really open, you know, not get locked into limiting yourself, limiting your potential, limiting your possibilities, or limiting yourself to be the way other people see you.
Mm-hmm. And one of the key things that resonated with me is that being a mom, you know, a lot of women go through this transition phase where the question pops up to them, okay, now I'm a mom. Does that mean that my career ends? Does that mean that I cannot be with my kids? So your life story and your life journey is such a prime example that you can still remain in the career where you have been. It's just that you give it a different direction, and being open to reinventing yourself, being open to exploring different possibilities and see where it has led you. Amazing.
You know, if you think about it, there's always this great discussion about women in the glass ceiling, and that only, I think the current number is 3% of women actually hold significant leadership positions in this country's top companies, you know, the senior management, and that it's because they're not promoted as often, and, you know, we can spend 2 hours talking about that. And there is a lot of truth to that. Here's the but, in my opinion. I think that many times it is because women, more than men, choose to take different career paths so they have more flexibility to be with their children and to do things at home. That it's not always about them not being promoted. There's a certain amount of that, of course. I'm not saying that we're all, you know, that we've hit equality. And I think that that's okay. I don't think there's a right or a wrong. When you're a young mom, at least in my case, and you're working, there's always a certain amount of guilt. Is the mom at home better because she was there every step of the way to see her child take the first step, or, you know, feed himself the first time, or whatever it is? And you look at other moms and they're home and you feel pangs of guilt that you are not. The flip side of that is going to work, especially if you want to go to work and you don't necessarily have to go to work, but if you're going to work and you love what you're doing, you know, you come home and maybe you're better with your kids. Maybe you're spending more focused time. I have two boys. I wanted my boys to see me as a woman equal to any man that is out there. I didn't grow up saying, I want to marry a man and I want him to support me. I grew up saying, I want to be the same as everybody else. So my kids, my boys, they don't look at my husband and I as, ooh, he's the man, she's the woman. We're totally equal. And that was my choice. It might not be the right choice for everyone, but I do think you raise a good point. I think that women, more than men, struggle with this, and maybe there is something, you know, that we've heard called maternal instinct that makes us like that. But again, I think things like that are choices, and sometimes, you know, let's be honest, sometimes women, as well as men, but women, because we're talking about them, they don't have a choice. They'd rather be home, and they don't have a choice. They need the income, or maybe they're single moms, or what have you. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it.
I love it what you said, that, you know, I had two boys, and I wanted them to see me as a woman equal to any man. And that is absolutely the truth. And being a mom myself, I have gone through the guilt phases where my son was in daycare, and then you come back and you hear the teacher saying, oh, he did this, he did that. I would feel the pangs of guilt, and yet at the same time, when I went home, I was not overwhelmed. I was not so out of focus. My whole thing was, how do I spend quality time with my son? And yes, I have missed out on a lot of his things, and yet I feel that I've spent really good quality time, which I would not replace it with anything else. And at the same time, he has experienced that a woman can be an equal. And let's face the facts. As the growing force increases with women workers, men are going to have more women bosses in the coming years. So what better way of raising our children and raising our sons to expect that?
Yeah, and I think it depends on your partner. You know, I mean, there was an article, I guess it was last year in Wharton, or a study, Wharton, University of Pennsylvania, and it said something along the lines that although women and men enter the workforce with similar levels of aspiration and confidence, and, you know, they want the same thing, over time, a woman's aspiration drops by more than 60%, and her confidence level falls as well, where men's aspirations and confidence levels stay pretty much the same. So, you know, women drop out of the workforce for all of the different reasons that we were talking about. But I also think that your partner is key. You know, your partner, whether your partner is, you know, same sex, opposite sex, or what have you. I mean, my partner, who happens to be my husband, he's just an awesome dad. You know, there's not a distinction between us. So if I'm traveling, he's always been here. He's always been at home. He's not afraid to, you know, he wasn't afraid to change diapers or do the laundry or, you know, do those things that way back when were considered a mom's job. And when he travels, I picked up the slack. And it's still that way. You know, our kids are older now, but, you know, if somebody needs something at the store, he goes and gets it. And I think that makes a huge difference, knowing that you have the support of a partner or a spouse, and you can count on that person. And then it makes you feel better about leaving or going to work or you know, whatever.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. Having the support system, regardless whether it's your partner, your friends, your parents, is such a key. Wow, great conversation. So this again brings us back to having that communication with your partner. And good communication, as we talked about, is a key to success in any field. How can a speaker capture the attention and frame their message so that as soon as you speak, people say, okay, this is for me, and I'm going to tune in.
So I think it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation, and that is, until you quickly talk about something that affects, benefits, or impacts your specific listener or audience, you won't have them. So, you know, there's an old acronym, what's in it for them, or what's in it for me? And at the beginning
yeah.
of, right, WII, whatever it is, FM. And at the beginning of any talk or any conversation, knowing that you don't have a lot of time to, you know, to grab somebody's attention, you have to think about who your audience is. So one of the biggest mistakes I can tell you that I see people make all the time is they'll talk to all audiences the same way. So let's say they're giving a presentation to a group of financial people, and then the next day they're giving the same presentation to a group of IT people. They might give the same presentation. Well, are IT people interested in what financial people are interested in? Maybe, but they're probably interested in it differently. So at the beginning of a talk or the beginning of a speech, one of the best things that you can do is give an example. Paint the picture. Help people see what you're talking about in their workplace, in their environment. So in other words, if let's say you're on a sales call and you're trying to sell the person you're talking to on a brand new expensive computer system or something like that, what is it that that computer system is going to do for them? Not you, them. Is it going to save time? Is it going to save money? Are they going to be able to do more with less? Will it be more efficient? Will they, be in a better position to bring in new projects? But people make the mistake of talking about themselves. And with all due respect, nobody cares about you. They want to know what your service or your product, they don't. They want to know what your service or your product is going to do for them. So an example, a story, a vignette, a powerful number, if it's, medicine, significant data, things like that will grab somebody's attention, because what you want that silent listener to do, essentially, is say, tell me more. Tell me more.
Mm-hmm.
And until you talk about what's in it for them, they're not going to be thinking, tell me more. They're going to be thinking, oh, you know what? When's this going to be over? I have a tennis game at 5:00. I mean, we all do the same thing, right?
All right. No. I love what you said, that we make the mistake of addressing different people in the same fashion and forgetting that different type of people, it could be different careers, it could be different professions, have different needs. So it's tailoring your talk to meet their needs and providing the value.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also what happens is, speakers are invited to different events, as you mentioned just now. And you also gave the examples. However, there is so much information out there. How can the speakers condense the complicated information into crisp, concise messages? Are there any techniques or strategies to it?
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things have to happen. I think, first of all, you have to ask the right questions. So, if you're speaking, as you said, at an event, you want to learn a little bit more about your audience. Who's attending? How old are they? Where do they come from? What are their positions? What do they care about? What are their biggest challenges? A question that I always ask is, when I'm done speaking, if there are one or two key points that really hit home that you want me to make, what would they be? If I walk out of this room and you say, wow, we weren't sure that we wanted to bring Karen Friedman in, we didn't know if we had time or we didn't know if we could afford the program, I say to them, if you say this was such a slam dunk, it was the best investment we ever made, what does that look like? So those are the types of questions that I ask. The next thing, and most importantly, is... And I'll talk to you in a minute about condensing information, but going back to what examples can I use that these people will relate to. What are their challenges? What are their problems? Where, you know, where are their pain points, if you will? And how can I use examples to drive home messages? Because if you're just, you know, dumping data or you know, slamming information at people, it's boring. People don't remember all the data. They don't remember all the information. They don't remember the facts. They remember the stories and examples. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if you heard a speaker, you wouldn't say to your friend, oh, I heard this speaker once, and she said 4,585 people, which equals, you know, 5% of what... You wouldn't say that. You would say, I heard this speaker once, and you know what she said? She told this story about. So the more stories you tell, the more examples, the more anecdotes, the more vignettes, the more memorable your talk is going to be, or the stickier your messages are going to be. So when it comes to, I think you just said techniques about condensing information, right? That's what you were talking about. You know, what we have to remember, and I'm not going to give you all the techniques because a lot of this is in coaching, but what we have to remember is there is a big difference between everything we think we need to tell them versus what they really want to know. Need, want. Big difference. So, number one, sit in their seats. If you are them, if you're a teacher, if you're a construction worker, if you're somebody who works in a fast food restaurant, it doesn't matter who your audience is. Put yourself in their seats and think about, if I were them, what would I want to know? If I'm senior management, what do I want to know? I want to know about trends. I want to know about market share. I want to know about cost. I want to know about competition. I want to know about, you know, price points and quarterly earnings. But if I am a sales representative and I'm selling product, I don't necessarily need to know all of those things that senior management wants to know. Sometimes a really simple process is this. Goes back to fifth grade, what we learned in school. Make an outline. Write down every single thing you can think of that might go into your talk or into your presentation. Maybe you're going to come up with 30 things. Well, you don't have time for 30 things. And if you try to tell people 30 things, they're going to tune out. So of those 30 things or 30 points, pick the top three or even the top four that are almost like your headlines, your big message buckets. And then look at the rest of the list and say, oh, you know what? This can go under message bucket one. This can go under message bucket two. And little by little, what you're going to have is three or four big picture headlines with a lot of little subpoints under it. Then when you look at all of those subpoints, that's where you say, where can I use an example? Where can I share something that happened that everybody here can relate to? Is there a visual image that is going to help create understanding? And what that's going to do is give you a little bit more of a model, if you will, a way to condense information into bite-sized nuggets or chunks that are easier for people to understand.
Oh, great pointers. I really like the idea of where you mentioned that, you know, put yourself in the shoes of your audience and thinking like they would think, what do I want? What is it that I want to learn? Because I have heard several coaches say that, yes, I know my niche, and yet I have done some marketing research and I still do not know the pain points of my audience. And especially if I'm going to different speaking engagements with different audience, what are the quick, sure ways to finding out what are the pain points of audience?
Well, first of all, if you don't know your audience, then it doesn't matter how smart you are. Everything will fall on deaf ears. Everything starts with audience. So, you know, it's the things that I was talking about before. What do these people care about? What do they want to know? I mean, three questions I always tell people to ask is this. You know, one, what does this information mean to them? In my TV days, it was, what does it mean to the reader? What does it mean to the listener? What does it mean to the viewer? So in this case, it's, what does it mean to the listener? What does it mean to the audience? You know, what is it that they care about? All right? And that goes to the second question. Why should somebody care about what I'm saying? You know, if you can't make people care, then you can't make them feel. And if you can't make them feel, you can't make them listen. So why should they care about this information? You know, I might care about it, but do they care about it? And the third one is the two words, so what? When I'm in a room with somebody, if I'm coaching them, they might say something to me and I'll say, so what, so what, so what, so what? And yes, they're going to get really annoyed, but it goes back to, what does it mean? So what does this mean? What does this mean to somebody else? So those are questions that you have to ask. But if you're, you know, going back to understanding your audience, I mean, that starts with, if you get, you know, like, I'll give you an example. This morning, I got hired to do an event that's going to come up in the spring. Okay? Now, I know that these people, all right, this is what I know at this point. I know very little at this point other than the initial call when we went through the planning and the agenda and some of the basics, and then they, you know, for them to decide whether or not they would like to work with us. So here's what I know. I know that these people are medical sales representatives. That doesn't mean I know the audience. So what? We've worked with many medical sales teams. So what? Is this team like another team I worked with last year? Well, they have the same jobs, but they work for different companies. So it is on me, not on the client, it is on me to find out as much as I can about these 20 or 25 people. Who do they speak to? What are their challenges? When they're selling to people, what is it that they are trying to accomplish? You know, are they giving presentations? How many people are in the audience? Or is this more like one-on-one? And what this is going to enable me to do is to create the content or to customize the content of the two-day program so it's specific to them, so it's about them. So we do situational role-playing. Do they use slides? Do they present with slides? Well, if they do and they're struggling with it, then this needs to be a component of the program. But somebody last year might have never used slides. So we have to ask the right questions in order to be the best that we can for the listener or for the audience. You know, there's an old that old saying that we learned a long time ago, you know, don't assume. To assume is to, you know, I don't want to say it on live radio, but if we assume things, there's an acronym, we make a such and such out of you and me. So we don't want to assume anything. We have to ask the right pointed questions, and we also have to realize that we're not politicians. We're professionals. We're business speakers. We're business coaches. You know, don't stand up there and start speaking like you're running for political office. Nobody wants to hear a robot. And the other thing, as long as we're on this subject, you know, if you can share things that are unique to you and unique to your experiences, if you're a researcher, for example, and you can say, just last week, you know, when I was in the lab and we were doing this, we noticed A, B, C, and we found that incredibly interesting or incredibly optimistic because. So somebody else can't say that because he or she was not in the lab and they didn't see that. So when you can showcase your own experiences and you can tie these experiences to messages, those messages are going to be that much more impactful to the people that you're speaking with.
Mm-hmm. Excellent points. Bring yourself to the speaking event. Bring yourself to the audience. Connect with them so that they feel a human connection and you're not a robot. Excellent points.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Divya, you know, realistically, communicating is not about talking. It's about connecting. If you can't connect with somebody, they're not going to pay attention to you. And the biggest complaint, if you will, or the biggest biggest challenge is people will say, I'll say, well, you know, if we're going into a coaching program, well, what do you want? You know, what are you looking for? Well, I want to engage. And mm-hmm. that's about connecting.
Absolutely. So I see we have a caller with area code 408. If you Yeah. Hello.
Hi there. That's me. Hi. I'm Anand calling from Monterey. I just wanted to talk to you guys about social media. How are you guys? How can people use social media to communicate? And do you guys like social media like Facebook? Do you not like it?
Do you want me to take a crack at that? This is Karen.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely, Karen.
I love social media. I think social media is just in a wonderful way to build community. But, you know, it's like anything else. You have to do it correctly. So just because there is social media doesn't mean that you should be on everything. It doesn't mean you should be, like, you know, tweeting every second and posting things on Facebook every minute and, you know, Pinterest and Instagram and you know, I mean, it's endless. So it's just like, let's go back to the olden days. Who's your audience? If you wanted to speak to the financial community, you might have gone to the New York Times or the Washington Post, right? It's the same thing with social media. If your audience is corporate America, then you don't necessarily want to take to, a certain Facebook feed if your client's not listening or not paying attention. So in other words, my clients, for example, are, let's say my clients are corporate America, all right? If I want to reach people who I want to go to where my audience is. So my audience might be on LinkedIn because LinkedIn is more of a professional site. I have two Facebook pages. I have a personal Facebook and I have a business Facebook. But on my personal Facebook, Mr. and Mrs. CEO aren't there because I don't allow them in. It's for my personal friends and family. Are they going to my professional Facebook page? I don't know, but here's the but. My website, for me, is where I have decided I want my center to be. So my advice to you is you have to decide where you want your center to be. You know what I mean? Like, if you want people to find you on, you know, Facebook, then communicate as much as you can through and with Facebook and direct people there. For me, KarenFriedman.com is my website. Thanks, Divya, for the plug. KarenFriedman.com is my website. And if I want people to learn about our offerings, I direct them there. You see what I mean? I'm going to give you a really quick example.
Yeah.
It might really make the point. And if I don't have my facts completely right, you realize I'm just giving you what I remember. Okay? A few years ago, there was a story with Domino's Pizza. And there were a couple of rogue employees that made a video, and they did some really disgusting, nasty things to the pizza. And they posted it on YouTube. And it was a big story. And it got, you know, 1 million or 2 million or whatever it was, millions of hits. And so the CEO of Domino's Pizza made a video basically letting everybody know that, you know, this was terrible, and they took great pride and safety and precautions when it came to their pizza, and here's how they make pizza, and, you know, they wanted to make sure that everybody knew that this type of thing did not go on. Okay, so that was the situation. The CEO or the people at Domino's went right to YouTube, to the same place where the culprit started, and that's where they put the video. Why? Because that's where the audience was. So for them to go to Twitter or to go to, you know, some other social media site and communicate there wouldn't have done them any good. They went to where the audience was that they wanted to affect. And last thing, and then I know I just went on for a while, and I apologize.
No, it makes It's awesome. No, the thing is, I think what people don't realize is that social media can be a huge opportunity, but at the same time, it's a different way of communicating. And you know, I'm actually writing a paper on this. I'm developing a technique, a model, if you will, and basically it's designed to help people improve the way they communicate on social media. And you know, whether you are trying to achieve a work goal or whether you're achieving a greater goal, in the Jewish tradition, you're trying to repair the world. So whether you're trying to repair the world or whether you're trying to do well in your own job, it is important to be able to do that effectively while being aware of the power of social media. And I think what you said really spoke to that.
Yeah, well, you know something else. You know, if you think about Twitter, so Twitter is 140 characters, right? And
right.
To me, that's terrific. Because it forces people to cut to the chase. You know, I always say to people, less is more. All right, that you know, we don't have time. It goes back to everything you know you think you need to tell people. So, if you were in a room with me, and let's say you were going on, I might say to you, hit the headline. Well, if you think about Twitter, Twitter's a headline. And I think that a couple of things have happened when it comes to social media. But with Twitter, it forces us to really become more efficient in the way we communicate. And that's a good thing because efficiency, being concise, is really important when we communicate. The second thing is it's allowed people to have a two-way conversation. You know, and build build community and interact, and not to mention that we can, you know, talk to people in China, which we couldn't do years ago, you know, without a very expensive phone call. So I think things like that, you know, any time that we can evolve, whether it's through social media or what it is, I think that is a really great thing.
But what about problems that are introduced by being on Facebook? You know, there can be power asymmetries. You know, when you're emailing, at least you know who the people on the email chain are. But when you're on Facebook, then you don't know who is there, who will get upset by what you say. For instance, let's say you're a Democrat in Texas, then almost anything you say is likely to offend people. Or if you're a Republican in, say, San Francisco, how do you manage that? Because a lot of the way people perceive what you say depends on who they think you are. Would you say that there are also some problems associated with using social media for communication?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, you know, it's when it comes to Facebook, I mean, you know, on your own page, on your own feed, I mean, you can control that. So if you've got somebody posting things and you don't like their posts, you can either unfriend them or unfollow them or, you know, block their posts, right? But
right.
But the other thing is this. You can't respond to everything. So you have to figure out what's important and what's not. You know, just if somebody posts on whatever, you know, avenue they choose to use, you know, I don't like this guy. He wears yellow shirts. All right, whatever. So you have to figure out what you're going to respond to. It was like when I go back to my days in the media, you know, there were many times, and this is, I think, a good analogy. There were many times that people didn't like what we said. They didn't like the tone. They didn't agree. They didn't like somebody that we interviewed. We didn't respond to everything. We only responded if we made an error, if it might have affected public safety, if we realized that perhaps we needed to interview many people who were on the other side of the fence. And I think it's the same thing. You've got to figure out when it's appropriate to respond and when it's not. And it goes back to some of the things that Divya and I were talking about. What are the right questions to ask? If you're a utility company or you're an airport or you're in public safety or something, the questions are, is public safety compromised? By not responding, are we missing an opportunity to provide valuable information? Is information that somebody else put out there so inaccurate that it might affect decisions or affect something in the community.
Absolutely. So, it's very interesting because, you know, I'm actually thinking about some issues, but they're slightly different ones. I don't want to interrupt the flow of your radio show, but, you know, there have been a series of incidents recently related to even student suicides, and these are related not just their grades, and this is happening in the Bay Area, you know, but also due to what they perceive in social media. And in recently, there was some issues around that. So I'm actually working on that. So that's a different line of thinking. But I really like the way you approached the brevity aspect of it. And I think you know, it's a slightly different world now because, you know, now you have many more channels, and these channels are all at your disposal. Yet at the same time, if we are not careful, we can end up, you know, this is kind of sabotaging our own reputation. Like you give the example of the Domino's organization and how the CEO responded there. And I think there is going to the source of where the problems were, which you, as you rightly pointed out, was where the bad video was posted in the first place. And I wanted to say thank you. I got a little bit out of talking with you about this.
You know, if I can add also, you know, if you, to your point, if something happens and it's, you know, people are talking about it on social media, like, you know, God forbid, suicide or, you know, things that are really serious and negative, we can also start to think about, well, is there a way that I can educate? Is there a way that I can provide information that might be helpful to someone else? I think that what we people have to realize is as much as you might push back and say, well, gosh, there's all this misinformation, you also have the opportunity and ability to attempt to add to the conversation, provide information. And, you know, remember, what's happened today is, unlike ever before, each and every one of us has now become our personal brand managers. I tell my teenage sons this all the time, you know, and this is probably not news to anyone, but look what happens when people are looking for jobs or people want to go to college. Where do recruiters go? They go to Facebook. They go to your social media pages to see what you've done or what you've posted. So more so than ever before, if you choose to be, you know, we're all out there, and you have the ability in a positive way and in a negative way to shape perceptions of yourself, of your community, and of your companies.
Absolutely. And thank you for that, Tuan. Thank you for your opinions and your thoughts on this. On that note, I should take your leave. Thank you, Dr. Parekh, as well. And thank you for having me as a caller on the show.
Thank you, Anand, for great questions. Thank you, Karen. Great answers.
All right.
So
see you guys.
I know. Continuing with our conversation, please share a few tips and a few examples of what can be the powerful opening and closing remarks.
I'm sorry, what can you say again? I'm sorry.
Could you share a few examples of powerful opening and closing remarks in a speech so that people are ready to tune in when you start out and then people remember you with your closing remark?
Well, yeah, it goes back to what we were discussing before the social media topic, and that is a powerful story. A powerful anecdote, you know, a significant number, a really interesting case study. But we don't want to do these things just simply to be entertaining. They have to drive messages. So if you're, I'll give you an example. We do a lot of work, or I do a lot of work with patient advocates. And these patients have significant challenges and are in varying disease states, and they're just these incredibly motivating, fabulous people. And so they talk to other people like themselves on a regular basis. And they share their stories. and we help them shape their stories. I can't tell them what to say. I didn't live their story. But they shape their stories to try to empower the other people that they speak to. So the idea being that they tighten it up, and they start with a portion of that story. That portion of the story might be their opening remark, but that portion has to drive a message for the listener. So in other words, we want to think about not what story do I want to tell, but what is the message that I'm trying to drive home? And is there a story or something that happened, my own personal experience, that can do that? And sometimes, Divya, sometimes, you know, we can use the same story to drive different messages depending on the audience. So think about, I tell people keep a notebook. You know, keep a notebook and write down different things that happen. I was coming through a train station once, and I saw these people. They're on the escalator, right? And I see this guy. He's like an engineer, and he's standing on the right. And I wasn't sure what he was doing, but all of a sudden, I don't know exactly what he did, but he hit a button, and the escalator switched gears. So it had been going up, and now it was going down. And all these people started stumbling because all of a sudden the escalator switched and they were going the wrong way. And I'm standing there because I was close to the escalator. I was about to get on it. And I'm as bewildered as everybody else. And people at first started laughing. And then I thought, well, that's not funny. The people on the escalator could have been hurt. So when I got to my car, I wrote it down. I don't know why I wrote it down. I had no idea what I was going to do with it. It was just something that I saw. I write a column for the business journals. And one day I'm sitting here in my office and I'm stuck and, you know, I'm having writer's block and I can't figure out what to write. And I pulled out my notebook. And I looked at all these little things that I wrote, and some of them I couldn't even remember what it was. And then I saw that. And I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, there's a good message here if I can figure out how to tie it in. Something about, you know, many of us have to take two steps backward before we're able to move forward. And I ended up using that escalator as sort of an anecdote or an example to set the stage for the article. So, you know, things like that will, again, attract somebody's attention more than just a bunch of information. Like, today I'm here to tell you, and, you know, they're yawning in your first sentence.
And as you mentioned, the stories are unique. The anecdotes are unique to you. And what a great way. Just have a notebook jotted down at the end of the day, or as you're walking around, have it in your wallet, a small notebook, or in your purse, and then you can draw upon these stories. And the best thing about it is that nobody has ever heard of them. So one of the other things that speakers struggle with is how to blend their natural style and still project strong executive presence, the strong body language, and bring in variety in their vocal delivery as they're giving the speech.
So that's a blended question, okay? And let me start with a couple of points. Executive presence is not something that we are born with. It's something that we hone and something that we learn. Executive presence is a combination of our style, our message, our body language. It's all of us. It's not just one part of us. And my best piece of advice when it comes to leadership and executive presence is, if you want presence, then be present. That is the first place to start. If somebody is speaking to you, look at them. Get off of your keyboard. Stop texting. Be fully present. Right? It's like, are you going to let your kid come to the dinner table and be on their phone or have their earbuds in their ears, or are you going to make them put it all away so they can pay attention to you? Same thing at work. Okay? So in terms of presence, it's everything from walking down the hallway and making eye contact with people instead of looking at your shoes. If you're in a room and you're on a stage, body language. You don't want to keep your hands in your pockets. You want to keep them out. You want your palms to be more open. You want to be approachable. The bigger the room, the bigger the gestures. You want to make sure that you have a certain amount of movement as opposed to standing in one place. But there's different rules for different spaces. So whether you're talking about presentations in conference rooms, meetings, big stages, they're all similar or different. If you're looking at slides, are you reading the slide or are you looking at your audience? If you're reading the slide, then you're not fully present to your listener. Nobody came to see a slideshow. They came to hear you. So we have to constantly be fully present with our audience. The second part of that, which you mentioned, is their natural style and projection. So many times what happens is the person who is incredibly personable and really fun to be with, the type of person you might want to go out for a cup of coffee or, you know, a beer or a bite to eat, gets up in front of a meeting room and they're not that person. They go into what I call presentation mode. They start talking like this and they lose all inflection and pitch and pace and vocal variety. So what you want to aim for is having a very focused conversation, as if you're talking to your next-door neighbor, but that next-door neighbor is really smart. They're just not smart in your subject. And when I coach people or we practice people, and this might be, you know, great advice for anybody listening, if you're using slides, practice two ways. First, practice with the slide. Because you have it up there, it's a little bit of your guide, your tip sheet, what have you, practice with it. And then shut the computer off or blank out the screen and do it again. So when you do it again, you'll find out that you're having much more of a conversation than delivering a presentation, and that's the difference.
Having a conversation rather than delivering the presentation.
Yes, it's a mind shift.
Excellent point. Mind shift. And also you mentioned that one of the examples that you shared with us was people are this fun-loving person that you love to be with, go and have coffee, and the minute they enter a room, they get into the presentation mode.
Right.
And sometimes that's also due to being nervous and being anxious about going in front of the people, and that's very normal and natural. So one of the things I share with some of my clients, and this is not for speaking engagements by any means, it's just about when they're getting ready to present in front of their team or they're going to go talk to their boss about promotion, or it could be anything, whether it's in work life or in professional or personal life, is there is really good research that has been out there via Amy Cuddy. And she says that if you put your arms on your waist and stand there for 2 to 3 minutes, it increases the levels of your certain hormones, especially testosterone, and it makes you feel more confident and more stronger. Just try that before you are getting ready to go in a situation which would make you feel nervous, and it's okay to be nervous. Allow yourself and give permission.
I never heard of that research before, but I will give you another tip, if you will. If you are getting ready to give a talk or a presentation, get to the room early and greet people when they come in. You know, hi, Divya, how are you? I'm Karen. Shake their hand. Because all of a sudden, you've now made a connection. You've looked at somebody. You've touched them. And in cases where you're in a bigger venue, those people no longer feel like strangers, as opposed to walking into a room cold. And the other thing is, the more you practice, the more you practice, the more you practice, the better you're going to be, but you have to practice out loud. We'll sometimes fail to do.
Great, great suggestion. Wow. I don't know where the hour flew by. I have learned
so much from you, Karen, today. I can't even tell you. It's just been an amazing hour that I've shared with you. So if, as a takeaway, if you were to share three tips with our audience, what would those be?
One would be, remember, when you communicate, it's not about you, it's about them. So look for ways to take what you want to say and frame it from somebody else's perspective. The second would be, look for opportunities to paint the picture, to use examples, stories, vignettes, things that really bring people into the fold, your own experiences, not simply to use them, but to tie them to messages. And third, which we didn't even talk about today, be passionate. If you want other people to be excited about what you have to say, then you need to be excited. And that means also, in cases where it's the right venue, have a little fun, smile, let people, make people feel that you're happy to be there.
Mm-hmm. No, great points. You know, I still have so many more questions. Hopefully, we will have Karen come back and share more of our pearls of wisdom. Karen, if anybody from our audience would like to reach you and ask questions or even reach out to you for help, since you help people become compelling communicators, what would be the best way to reach you?
There are a lot of free resources on the website, which is Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N.com. We have lots of, you know, free videos and articles and all kinds of resources that would be helpful. And obviously, you can reach me or members of my team through the website as well.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Karen. It's been such an honor to have you on the show. And listeners, if you want to reach me, feel free to reach me at contact@diviaparekh.com. It is contact@diviaparekh.com. And thank you for joining us. I greatly appreciate
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Divya. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Karen. Again, I would like to just share my acknowledgement and appreciation and privilege to be on the same call as you, because I really enjoyed our call and learned so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Until next time, audience, take care. Bye-bye.